Is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Judge Connolly, and Judge Cochran. Judge Louise Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. We have three cases on our calendar for oral argument this morning. The first case is State of Minnesota versus Mattson. We are proceeding by Zoom this morning. But we'll remind both of you that the same rules apply. You will each have 15 minutes to make your argument, and counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal should you choose to use it. I'll just remind both of you, when you are not addressing the court, when it's not your turn to be giving oral argument, to please mute yourselves, which will help with all our connections. So with that, and you should both see a tile that has the time marked on it. So there won't be any surprises there. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Jastin Mattson. If a defendant pleads guilty to an offense, he can be permitted to withdraw that plea if the factual basis is inadequate. A factual basis is inadequate if it fails to establish an essential element of the offense or if the defendant negates an essential element. In this case, Mr. Mattson pleaded guilty to first-degree aggravated robbery. The factual basis required him to admit to facts to show that he took personal property from another and used force for the purpose of overcoming the victim's resistance to the taking or carrying away of the property. Mr. Mattson's plea here suffers from two related but fatal flaws. First, he did not admit, and the record does not establish, that he used force for the purpose of overcoming the victim's resistance. Mr. Mattson said at the plea hearing that he used force as a reaction to the victim's attempts to sexually bother Mr. Mattson's girlfriend. While he acknowledged that he assaulted the victim, he did not say that the purpose of the force was to overcome the victim's resistance. Secondly, Mr. Mattson negated that he had the specific intent to commit robbery when he repeated that he didn't try to rob the victim. These two flaws render the plea inadequate and therefore invalid, and we would ask this court to permit Mr. Mattson to withdraw his guilty plea.
One of the things we look at, Mr. Donovan, in deciding whether a plea is accurate is whether the defendant pleaded guilty to a more serious crime than he could have been convicted of following a trial. Are you arguing that that's the situation here?
Not necessarily that he admitted to a more serious crime than he could have been convicted of. I'm not quite sure. The only offense that he pled guilty to was aggravated robbery. And this is a case where he is saying throughout the plea hearing, you know, I wasn't trying to rob him. I didn't want to rob him. You know, even when they push him at one point saying, I can't say that, I'm under oath. And so I can't admit to that. So I don't know if his plea supports that aggravated robbery.
Does he have to use the word rob to plead guilty to the elements of the aggravated robbery charge?
No, he doesn't have to use the word rob at all. And I think that actually sort of gets to the heart of this case in many respects, is I think he was sort of operating under more of a layperson's thinking of what a robbery is, and that it's just an assault plus a theft. And that's why I think he's saying, I didn't try to rob anyone. I did, but I didn't try to. So he doesn't have to specifically say, I robbed someone. I think he does have to say that my purpose was to rob someone, or more specifically, actually, it should be my purpose in using this force was to overcome AS's resistance or to compel AS's acquiescence to the taking. So that's what he needed to say.
Counsel, I'd like to just follow up on that. Does he actually have to say that that was his purpose in using the force, or does he have to admit to facts from which that can be inferred, given the Supreme Court's direction in Nelson that the trial judge must make certain that facts exist from which the defendant's guilt of the crime charge can reasonably be inferred?
And I would agree, Your Honor, that is the standard. I think the cleanest way for a court to typically infer these things is to have them just come out and admit the facts themselves rather than leaving something to an inference. But even, you know, using that standard, I don't know that the facts that he admitted to here permitted that inference. I think that if things were changed with the factual basis, that inference could happen. I think if, for example, he said, you know, I I demanded his phone during this incident, and he had to give it to me because I had a gun to his head. I think you could infer that his purpose is to overcome the resistance or compel acquiescence. Or if he said, I used force because I wanted to take his phone and that was how I was going to get it, you can infer that purpose. Maybe even if he had said, I demanded his phone. I don't know that that's enough, but we don't even have that here. We have him say, I took the phone. We have him say, I asked for the phone, but we don't even have him demanding the phone to sort of couple with that force so that the purpose can be inferred. I think there are a few things that if they were cleaner in this guilty plea would support the factual basis, but because they didn't happen, it's just not there to make that inference.
But why can't we infer from his admission that during the course of taking the phone, he used the gun? Why isn't that enough from which the inference to use the pellet gun, in fact, to effectuate the taking can be inferred?
Because he might have taken the phone during the use of force, but Townsend makes clear that the purpose of the force, the specific intent here, has to be to overcome that resistance. So even if they happen at the same time, it doesn't mean that his purpose in using the force was to overcome the victim's resistance. And I think that actually leads a little bit as well into sort of my second argument about negating the intent. And even if he's saying, I took it while I used force, he's negating that he had that specific intent when he says, again, repeatedly, I didn't try to rob him. We didn't try to rob him. I did rob him, but I wasn't trying to rob him. I think that saying that you didn't try to do something is antithetical to the idea of specific intent, and saying that you have that purpose and conscious desire to bring about that criminal result, or what's, I think, a little cleaner on what the specific intent in robbery is post-Townsend, the purpose of the force is to overcome the resistance. I don't know that you can make the inference that that's his purpose when he's repeating throughout, I wasn't trying to do this. I didn't try to rob anyone. I did rob someone. So again, if it was a few more things were here or a few more statements weren't made, but the idea that he's saying that he wanted to rob someone while not trying to, I think maybe an example would maybe make my point there a little clearer. If we have, hypothetically speaking, if we're just talking about an assault, which is a crime that has a very clear general intent type and a very clear specific intent type. If you were pleading guilty to assault harm and you said, I didn't try to assault anyone, but I did, I don't think you could say that he negated the element of intent because it's a general intent crime. As long as it was volitional, he could say, I didn't try to assault someone, but if you did a voluntary act and caused that harm, it's still an assault. But if it was an assault fear, which is a specific intent crime, and if you were to say, I didn't try to assault anyone, I think that would negate the specific intent because you then don't have the intent to cause that fear. And again, I know we're not talking about an assault here, but just because the specific intent aspect of assault is a little bit cleaner than what it is in robbery. I think for a long time, robbery was called a specific intent crime, but it was just more of a nebulous idea rather than having a concrete element that you could point to in the statute, rather, to say this is what the specific intent is. After the Supreme Court's decision in Townsend, I think it's very clear what that specific intent is. It's the use of force for the purpose of overcoming someone's resistance. So that's what he needed to be pleading guilty to, or admitting to facts that, if they don't meet that exactly, support that inference.
Couldn't we infer, though, from all of the facts acknowledged during the guilty plea hearing, that he was using the force to both react to the victim's behavior toward your client's significant other and to obtain the phone? What if the force was used for both purposes, wouldn't that be sufficient to support his guilty plea?
If there were facts to support that it was for both the purposes, I think that might be a different case. I just don't know if those facts are here, because we never have him say, you know, I started out using force for this reason and I continued using this force so that I could obtain that phone. Even if we look at just a little later in the transcript, when they talk about the text message that he sent later that, I think it was that next day or later that night, saying, hey, bro, I just lost my phone beating up Deidre's rapist. I think right there, it's pretty clear that, again, his purpose and force is that he wants to, you know, he's very angry at AS for some sexual pestering, I suppose is what I'll call it here. But he's never saying, and also another use of my force was so that I could take that phone. And again, if there were different facts, I think that you could certainly get to that point where you're saying, okay, we can infer it from there. Again, if he demands the phone or says he had no choice but to give me that phone, I think you can infer there, okay, at some point there are dual purposes. But he just says, I took the phone. He said, I asked for the phone, but never in the facts he admits to connects those in his mind. He never makes the connection to what he was thinking connected the force and so, the taking.
Mr. Donovan, I want to make sure I understand your argument. So let's say I'm robbing you.
Okay.
And I have a gun and I point it at you and I say, may I please have your phone? But I'm not trying to rob you. And you give me your phone. And then to top it off, I shoot you. And let's say that's what I admit to at the plea hearing. That's not enough to convict me of ag robbery, first degree. Because I said, I'm not trying to rob you. Would you please give me your phone? And I'm pointing the gun right at you. And then after you give me your phone, I shoot you. So those facts, if I admit to those facts at a plea hearing, that's not enough because I've negated the intent by saying, may I please have your phone? And I'm not trying to rob you.
I think the difference in your scenario, I think that might be enough. I think the difference in your scenario is you never articulated a different reason at the beginning of that for using the force against me. So it's hard to say, oh, maybe
well, I mean, at this plea hearing, Mr. Donovan, I mean, he negates, perhaps I'm wrong. I don't have the whole transcript in front of me. I thought he negated that he was acting in self-defense or the defense of his girlfriend. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, he says that self-defense doesn't apply here, but he also, there's nothing to, it's a little unclear what exactly it was that AS said to Ms. Mankus. He was trying to do sexual encounters. If maybe he's just propositioning her. You wouldn't be entitled to use self-defense if someone's just propositioning someone. And so in that case, it could be, I'm angry that you're saying sexually suggestive things to my girlfriend. I'm not entitled to use any sort of force or self-defense because there's not a felony being committed against someone in that case. So even if he's not, you know, if self-defense doesn't apply here, doesn't mean that his purpose wasn't still reacting to whatever the sexual encounters or sexual pestering that AS was doing to Ms. Mankus.
Well, the concern I have, Mr. Donovan, is as in all future plea hearings, as long as the defendant says, well, yeah, I did rob him, but I didn't really try to rob him, that's enough to negate specific intent. I guess I'm concerned about where this would go down. I mean, I just see a lot of plea withdrawals, that don't make a lot of sense to me. I understand your argument that it is specific intent, but I also just see potential here for someone to game the system.
I think
that's my opinion.
Certainly, and I certainly understand that concern. I think that how you negate that concern that you have about all these plea withdrawals is if that were the plea hearing that happened, then it's up to the district court judge to say, I can't accept this plea. Because before it gets to you, the district court judge still has to accept the plea. So it would be on the district court judge or if, you know, whoever the attorney questioning the defendant, they would say, this is not a valid plea. You're not meeting all the elements. It never gets to you. We're not going to have all these plea withdrawals. Those pleas would never be accepted in the first place. And so it's sort of an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. And
so you don't think the attorney's subsequent colloquy with your client, well, I'm not sure how you could rob someone without trying. What did you take from him? I took his phone and an attached cord. And did you have permission to take the phone? No. And during the course of taking the phone, did you use the pellet gun? Yes. Where did you shoot him? In the back of the head. You also shot him in the eye. You don't think, but you didn't, but so you did. So you're suggesting what the attorney also needs to say. So you really did try to rob him, right? And what if he said no?
Then that's not a guilty plea. Then the district court judge just shouldn't accept that plea. It's not uncommon to see sort of aborted pleas like that, where someone doesn't want to admit to all the elements, then the court says, I'm not going to accept this plea and we'll set this matter on for trial. So it is incumbent on all involved in that plea hearing to make sure that all of these elements are then met through that colloquy.
And is this the agreement of 81 months, was that, I'm not sure in the record, was that a downward durational?
No, that was top of the box.
Okay, so it was a guideline sentence?
Yes.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Donovan, if the question, and I'm looking, I guess, page 22 of the transcript, the question defense counsel asked after establishing that your client took the phone without permission, the question was asked, and during the course of the taking, did you use the pellet gun? What if instead the lawyer would have said, and for the purpose of taking the gun, taking the phone, did you use the pellet gun? Would we have a valid plea then? I mean, is this down to a matter of three or four words?
I think it's down to, and my time is going to expire, but can I be permitted to briefly answer that question?
You may briefly answer.
Thank you. It might come down to a few words, but those words are part of the element. I think if he had said what you just said, you know, and your purpose of using this gun was to take the phone, then he has that specific intent. Then this aligns with Townsend. I think that the lawyer even is maybe, again, operating with sort of the layperson's view pre-Townsend of what a robbery is. And so while it might be just a few words, it is the words of intent that are necessary here. So seeing that I am out of time, we would just ask that you permit Mr. Madsen to withdraw his plea. Thank you.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. When we get the timer, counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bonnie Norlander, and I am a prosecutor with the St. Louis County Attorney's Office. So appellant's brief calls out the state for not citing Townsend in respondent's brief. And yes, Townsend confirms or clarifies that to be guilty of robbery, the individual or defendant must use or threaten force for the purpose of overcoming the person's resistance to the taking or carrying away of property. And the state agrees with this, that is an essential element of the crime. But that doesn't mean a court can only find a sufficient or accurate factual basis only if a defendant says the words, the force I used was for the purpose of taking the victim's property. The purpose of the force can be inferred considering all of the surrounding circumstances established during the factual basis. And this was the actual analysis applied by the court in Townsend. And Townsend was a guilty verdict rather than a guilty plea like we have here, but the court considered the evidence in the trial to infer the appellant's or the defendant's purpose for the use of force was to take the property. And this is a necessary analysis because intent is a product of the mind and generally proved by circumstantial evidence.
I understand what you're saying, but I have a little bit of a problem with relying so much on sufficiency of the evidence case law when what we're dealing with here is the validity of a guilty plea that raises different issues. I understand that Nelson versus State talks about inferring admission to an element of an offense based on the admission of some of the underlying facts. But can you explain which underlying facts Mr. Madsen admitted to here that would allow this court to reasonably infer that in fact he admitted the intent element of this offense?
Yes, I think some of the important facts to consider are that when appellant Mr. Madsen got into the victim's vehicle, he had a loaded gun or a loaded pellet gun already with him. And appellant was only in the vehicle with the victim for less than one city block when this incident occurred. And he admitted to taking the victim's phone, and he admitted to taking it while he had the pellet gun pointed at the victim's head and actually shot the victim in the back of the head and the eye. And although appellant claims that the purpose or the initial purpose for assaulting the victim was because of the alleged sexual pass made at his girlfriend, that just doesn't coincide with taking the victim's phone. It just doesn't jive with one another. And also, second,
why wouldn't we infer that he didn't want the victim to be recording this assault? that that's why the phone was taken?
Well, in this case, we don't have any facts that indicate that he didn't say that first of all, he didn't indicate that he wanted to prevent the victim from, you know, calling 911 or from recording the assault. But also, I think with just the short period of time and the taking of the phone, that that implies that the purpose was the robbery.
Ms. Norlander, how do we know? Are you taking this from the complaint? How do we know there was a short period of time? I mean, this is all news to me.
In the factual basis, the appellant says that he was going to get a ride from the victim to the gas station, which was just one block away.
So he says one block away?
I believe so, if I'm correct.
Would you agree that it's not appropriate in this case to look at the complaint for purposes of determining whether the factual basis is adequate, because appellant didn't admit to the facts in the complaint at the plea hearing?
I would agree to that, yes.
Norlander, there was some, my memory is fading, but there was something also about money being taken. Was that the girlfriend who took the money, or who took the money?
I don't know that was in the, I don't believe that the appellant admitted to taking any money during the assault. I think it was just the phone and the attached cord that he admitted to taking. So the state does agree that appellant did make a statement negating the essential element of the offense here, that appellant did say during the factual basis that he did not try to rob the victim, and goes on to say, did I rob him? Yes. But did I try to? No. I asked for the phone during the incident. But then he goes on to admit facts that correct his purpose or mens rea, specifically, you know, facts that I mentioned, that he got into the vehicle with a loaded gun. They were together for such a short period of time. But him asking for the phone just doesn't make sense with the claim purpose of the use of force, which was to defend his girlfriend or retribution for a sexual pass. And the fact that he's shooting and pointing the gun while asking for the phone. And so these facts that he admitted to after his negating statement that he did not try to rob the victim, basically correct his previous negated statement. And the fact that statements negating an element of an offense can be corrected during the course of a factual basis has been recognized and allowed. And even in cases relied upon heavily by the appellant, one of the main cases cited by appellant is Mikulak, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And that case acknowledges that even though a defendant makes a statement negating the necessary mens rea element, that can be corrected in the factual basis. The difference between...
Go ahead, Judge Bjork.
Well, the problem I have with all this is it seems like you're really equating the language, I used the pellet gun during the course of taking the phone, with Townsend's direction that the inquiry as to intent is whether the weapon is used for the purpose of getting the item from the other person. And I'm having trouble with your implicit equating of those two terms. Can you help me with that?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't think I understand the question.
Well, I guess Townsend made it very clear, and Townsend was decided before the guilty plea was entered in this case, but Townsend made it very clear that in examining the force element, that the intent, that the focus in terms of intent is doing something for the purpose of overcoming resistance to the taking of property to which you're not entitled. And for the purpose of overcoming resistance is different from a statement that you've used force during the course of taking something. And I'm just having trouble reconciling what Townsend tells us the appropriate element is, or how that element works with what happened here.
Sure. And I think, yes, I think Townsend says that the purpose of the force or the threat of force with the pellet gun needs to be for overcoming the resistance to taking the property. But that the we don't need appellant to admit that like say the magical words that was my purpose. The fact that was his purpose could be inferred from all the facts established during the factual basis.
Well, and I may agree with you in a case where you didn't have the defendant specifically say, I didn't try to rob anyone. I mean, now when you have an express negation, as you agree there was in this case, it seems to me you need a little bit more clarity from which a inference can be drawn.
And it's the state's position that the facts that the appellant then admitted to clears up that negation. And also, you know, a second argument or point to that is that case law has recognized that even though the initial intent could be for a purpose other than taking the property, the use of force could carry over to the actual taking of property. So if we assume that appellant initially used the force to defend his girlfriend because of the sexual past, that could carry over to the use of force could carry over to the taking of the phone. And this was demonstrated or explained in Anderson and Olvida, which was cited in the state's brief, that in Anderson, the defendant initially used a shotgun to force a victim to the floor and for compliance. But then minutes later, he demanded the victim's purse, and the court found that this force carried over to the taking of the victim's purse. And likewise in Olvida, the purpose of the initial force was retribution. If I remember correctly, I believe that the defendant believed that the victim was a snitch, but that for then after assaulting the victim, he demanded the victim's wallet, and the court found that force could carry over despite a different initial purpose.
And our counsel, are those cases sufficiency of the evidence cases or plea withdrawal cases?
That was... Those were sufficiency of the evidence cases.
Counsel, just following up on Judge Bjorkman's prior question, which I think is a really important question. You know, I think there needs to be some clarity after a negation that as to the facts that would support a reasonable inference as to intent. So what specific facts after he said that he didn't try and rob the person are sufficient or would allow us to reasonably infer intent here?
And I think, initially when the appellant during his factual basis stated that he didn't try to rob the victim, he then goes on to say, did I rob him? Yes. But did I try to? No. I asked for his phone during the incident. And that could just be explained too by his, what a lay person or his definition of rob is. But then also the defense attorney kind of interjected, well, I don't know how you can rob somebody without trying to. And then they go into facts where that contradict his statement, negating statement, that he didn't try to rob the victim. And specifically, you know, the fact that he's with the victim for such a short period of time, less than one city block, he, you know, entered the vehicle with a loaded pellet gun, and he admitted to taking the victim's phone with a pellet gun, pointed at the victim's head and actually shooting the victim in the head and the eye. And he doesn't at all state any other purpose for taking the victim's phone or why it was taken or asked for while the pellet gun was pointed at the victim's head. And it's just the state's position that these facts and circumstances are not consistent with appellant's statement that he didn't try to rob the victim and that his purpose was to defend his girlfriend from the sexual pass. So basically that initial negated statement was corrected by detailed facts later in the appellant's factual basis.
Ms. Norlander, in the plea transcript, did he admit he sat in the back behind the victim in the car?
So now I'm trying to, because I know that I know that to be a fact, but I think that he did admit to getting into the back seat of the vehicle.
Well, that helps you.
Let's see. So just in summary, real quick, yes, appellant made a statement negating the necessary mens rea at the beginning of his factual basis. However, you know, if you consider all of the circumstances described by appellant's guilty plea, it can be inferred that his purpose for the use of force was to take the property. Essentially, the appellant's statement negating the necessary mens rea was corrected during the course of the factual basis. And finally, even if the appellant's initial purpose for the use of the force was because the victim made a sexual pass toward appellant's girlfriend, the evidence in the factual basis would establish that the force carried over to the taking of the phone, which was completely unrelated to the initial purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Donovan, you will have the last word.
Thank you. And I will be brief. Just to Judge Connolly, to a point you just made, I would just note that while Mr. Mattson got in the back seat, it's not as though they then left the front seat open. Ms. Mankus was in the front seat and then he got in the back seat. So it's not necessarily a case where it's just the two of them, one right behind the other. But the main point I want to make in rebuttal is this idea of the force carrying over from Anderson. Anderson and Oliveira, they both predate Townsend, and I'm not sure that the idea that the force can carry over remains good law in the face of Townsend. One note that they make in Townsend when they're reaching their conclusion that the purpose or that the use of force must be for the purpose of overcoming the victim's resistance, our interpretation distinguishes the use of force necessary to complete the offense of simple robbery from other possible purposes of using force. So I'm not sure in that case that force can still carry over and be considered unless you have that purpose in using that force. I think that also—
John, what was the other possible use of force here?
It was the use of force that he was angry at AS for, again, some sort of sexual comments or sexual encounters or pestering that he was making to Ms. Mankus that he articulated at the plea hearing.
But did he not— does the plea hearing make clear that he kind of like walked that back when he said, you know, I was not acting in self-defense or anything like that?
No, again, I don't think it walks it back because he wouldn't be— he's saying I'm not entitled to self-defense. We're withdrawing that because, again, as long as AS is not, you know, trying to commit a felony against Ms. Mankus, he wouldn't be entitled to self-defense. So if he was just making sexually inappropriate comments, if that's what it was, he wouldn't be entitled to self-defense, and he could say at the plea hearing, no, I understand, I'm not entitled to self-defense. That's still why I did what I did, even if he doesn't have that full defense, or if he, you know, he doesn't meet every element of self-defense. I think also important in Anderson, though, as far as them saying that the force carried over, the initial use of force in Anderson was still for a robbery. There is a robbery going on. They're using this sawed-off shotgun, I believe it was, to compel everyone's acquiescence in them robbing a drugstore. And then the specific robbery that they're challenging in Anderson is a woman comes in, I believe, with her daughter during the robbery, and they point the gun at her to get her on the floor. I think right there you say, well, that force is used to for the purpose of compelling your acquiescence. And it's more that the taking happens later. But the overall force that's being used is still for those robbery purposes. So if Anderson would survive Townsend, I think it would on those grounds, and that was the initial use of force. So I think if the court has no further questions, we would just ask that you permit Mr. Madsen to withdraw his plea.
Anything further? Seeing none, that will conclude our argument in this case. Thank you both for your helpful arguments. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.